from the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. The reception for the noted scientist had been underway for half an hour when someone noticed that the guest of honor wasn't present. A look of consternation came over the host's face until he remembered that, of course, the guest wouldn't be there for a while because he'd gone for his daily half-mile swim. Now, who would go for a swim at a time like this? That could only be Dr. Sidney Chapman of the University of Alaska's Geophysical Institute, one of the world's foremost authorities on the aurora and geomagnetism. Last week, the university honored Dr. Chapman by dedicating the building housing the Geophysical Institute in his name. The honor was in recognition of his 80th birthday, which he observed on January 29. The building dedication evoked a flood of stories and anecdotes about this famed scientist. Sidney Chapman, his life and his times, is our story today on This Is Your University. Sidney Chapman has painted bold and skillful strokes across the broad canvas of geophysics since he first applied his scientific talents in 1910 as a chief assistant at the Royal Observatory at Greenwich, England. Today, nearly six decades later, graduate students entering the field of geophysics are challenged by Dr. Chapman's astonishing command of the tools of their trade. They find it hard to believe that this is the same Sidney Chapman who half a century ago published his first hallmark works on the kinetic theory of gases. Younger scientists admire the sustained enthusiasm and vigor that have seen Dr. Chapman average more than one publishing scientific paper every 2 months for more than 50 years, an average that he now exceeds in his ninth decade. It is said that Sidney Chapman owes his remarkable vigor and good health to a lifelong affinity for the outdoors and regular exercise. Indeed, the stories about his walking, his daily swim, and bicycling have become legends in his own time. There was a time in Australia when Dr. Chapman, then approaching 70, announced his intention to bicycle the 200 miles between Canberra and the city of Sydney. The time of the year was January, which is in the middle of the Australian summer. Two young astronomers, greatly distressed that an elderly Englishman should attempt so taxing a feat in the heat of midsummer, insisted on accompanying him. One would ride the first half of the journey and the other the second half. At the start of the trip in Canberra, the temperature was about 105 degrees. At the finish in Sydney, Dr. Chapman arrived fresh, hale, and hearty, but both of his younger fellow travelers had to go to bed to recover. On another occasion, Dr. Chapman was in London, and a fellow scientist recalls this incident. My favorite story about Dr. Chapman is his impressive feat of riding his bicycle from Kensington to Piccadilly through the dense evening traffic in London in full evening dress to attend a soiree at the Royal Society. No one but Sidney Chapman would attempt to mount a cycle in such an attire, let alone make his way through some of the world's most crowded streets. When Dr. Chapman isn't on a bicycle or out for his leisurely 10-mile walk, he's hard at work on his favorite preoccupation, studying the aurora. Since 1951, he has been professor of geophysics and advisory scientific director of the Geophysical Institute and has played an invaluable role in helping to solve the mysteries of the Earth's most spectacular celestial show. Dr. Chapman retired in 1949 from a post at Oxford University, but it's been a strange retirement for this untiring scientist, for he has since divided his time between the University of Alaska and the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. He also annually visits a half a dozen other institutions. He is a member of nearly 20 scientific societies, was international president of the International Geophysical Year, and has received medals and honorary degrees from societies and institutions throughout the world. Yes, a strange retirement indeed. Now at 80, Dr. Chapman looks ahead to the challenge of new celestial mysteries as man begins to probe the far reaches of space. And as he has for nearly two decades now, he'll be working on the solutions of these mysteries at your university. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and the radio station KUAC. It has been brought to you as a public service. Your announcer has been Paul Quist, and this is the University of Alaska Broadcasting System. From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. Scientific research, the process of going up alleys to see if they're blind, has proliferated on every university campus in recent decades. The scientists, men who endure setbacks to pave alleys for often brilliant comebacks, now populate the campuses in numbers equal to academic faculties. This is true of the University of Alaska, where 17 institutes and associated agencies carry out major research programs, programs which take advantage of the university's unique location in the subarctic of interior Alaska. There is accessibility to the oceans from the Pacific to the Arctic, to the glaciers and permafrost areas, to the aurora zone where the sun bombards the earth with charged particles. At this moment, somewhere in the icy Bering Sea, five scientists from two of the university's research organizations are aboard the 133-foot, 300-ton Alpha Helix, a biological research laboratory vessel. The work of these men is our story today on This Is Your University. Seal pups born on the sea ice enter life with body-warming fur, much like typical land animals. But if the fur provides insulation from cold on land, what processes occur that eventually make it possible for the pup to plunge into the frigid sea? How does the body adapt to swimming in freezing water? The answer to these and other puzzles is being sought by five biologists from the University of Alaska. Today they are aboard the Alpha Helix, a floating laboratory in the ice packs of the Bering Sea between Nunavak and St. Lawrence Islands. Senior scientist from the university is Dr. Lawrence Irving, advisory scientific director of the Institute of Arctic Biology. Also participating from the institute are Professor L. Keith Miller and John Baust, a graduate student. The university's Institute of Marine Science is represented by its director, Dr. Donald W. Hood, and a graduate student, Peter McGroy. And from the campus is Dr. Francis Fay, who represents the Arctic Health Research Center, a federal facility. These six scientists have joined the first of four phases of the Bering Sea expedition, sponsored by the Scripps Institute of Oceanography. The overall expedition is led by Dr. P.F. Scholander of the University of California at San Diego, director of the Scripps Physiological Research Laboratory. Dr. Irving and Dr. Scholander were associated once before, from 1947 to 1948, when they established the Arctic Research Laboratory at Point Barrow, a laboratory now operated by the university under contract with the Office of Naval Research. The first phase of the Bering Sea expedition is a cooperative undertaking with the University of Alaska and the Scripps Institute. It began March 10 and concludes in late April. Subsequent phases, which run until October, will involve some 50 scientists from five nations. The entire expedition was funded by grants from the National Science Foundation. Before leaving the university campus, Dr. Irving outlined another project of the expedition. He said, "Portions of the superficial tissues on warm-blooded seals and walrus may be near freezing when exposed to icy water. Nevertheless, this tissue retains its sensitivity. One of our goals will be to find out why by studying the nerve functions. Of course," he continued, "fishes and crabs are likewise effective and operational despite cold waters under Arctic ice, so we will be examining their cellular and organ functions also." Dr. Irving believes the operation of supercooled tissues in these animals may throw light on the fundamental nature of circulation among cells, upon which all life processes depend. Whether Dr. Irving and his associates will find blind alleys or pave new roads in science will not be known for many months, but of this we can be certain. The intelligent quest for knowledge is success in itself, and this quest is a constant pursuit of the scientific research establishment at your university. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUAC-FM. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting System. From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. Spring will soon be upon us, and with it comes the 6th annual Spring Poetry Contest, sponsored by the University of Alaska's College of Arts and Letters. Professor Oliver Everett, contest chairman and former poet laureate of Alaska from 1965 to 67, is our guest today on This Is Your University. Professor Everett, this will be the 6th annual poetry contest at the U of A. Could you tell us just who are the contributing poets?
The contributing poets will have to be anonymous at this point, of course, but we have four categories. The non-student category, which will include even faculty members or part-time students throughout the state, but no staff member from the Arts and Letters College, of course. And then the college student bracket, which includes any college student who wishes to enter, who has been enrolled in one or the other or both semesters this current year. The same is true also in the third category with the high school students, namely grades 9 through 12. And then we have a lower category yet, which we have called junior high or grade, which means the grades 1 through 8. In the top three brackets, there will be $50 prizes for the best poem in each category. And in the junior high or grade level, the prizes have been broken up into three, $25, $15, and $10. We spread it out a little bit with the youngsters. The judges, of course, will have the privilege of accepting or rejecting entries. And it could happen, as it did last year, that one category didn't have a winner because there weren't enough submissions of quality. That happened in the non-student group last year. Otherwise, every other category was well represented.
How many entries did you have last year, Professor Everett?
Approximately 450, and we probably will have a little more, so we are estimating about 500 this year.
Good. Well, just what are the rules for this poetry contest?
The poems to be submitted can be in any form or length or on any subject. The person submitting may submit up to three entries if he wishes. And then these submissions have to be mailed in such a way that we simply give each one a code number. The person sending in should include a stamped and addressed envelope with his name on, and he should also have no identification marks on his poems that are being submitted at the time. As we receive these, we simply give each a code number so that the judges do not know whose poems they are looking at. I think this pretty well covers it. It's wide open.
Mm-hmm. And just when do these entries have to be in?
The deadline is April the 15th at 5 o'clock at the College of Arts and Letters. Mm-hmm. Any submissions after that date will not be accepted.
And if I understand correctly, the poem has become the property of the University of Alaska.
Yes, but rights to the individual authors will be transmitted back to, from what I've been told.
Could you tell us who the winners of last year's contest were?
Last year, the winner in the high school division was David Mollett of Fairbanks. In the college division, Kelly Palmquist. In the non-student category, there was no award because of lack of entries. And then we had a first winner in the grade level, Natalie Sperlin of Sunshine Station. A very delightful little poem in that case for a child.
Calling all poets to the University of Alaska's 6th Annual Spring Poetry Contest, sponsored by the University of Alaska's College of Arts and Letters. Thank you, Professor Oliver Everett, contest chairman and former poet laureate of Alaska from 65 to 67, for being our guest today on This Is Your University. This Is Your University is a weekly recorded program aired by this station as a public service. It was produced by the Department of News Service of the University of Alaska in cooperation with the university radio station KUAC. Your announcer has been Paul Quist. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting System.
From the University of Alaska at College, this is your university. The University of Alaska's president is pointing to increased enrollment, enrollment that is steadily climbing despite the recent disaster. He laments the university's inadequate facilities. A new library is an almost desperate necessity. The legislature is debating its university's appropriation. Lawmakers are sympathetic to the growing needs of a growing university, but funds must balance. And the year? 1935. Yes, 1935, when the university's president was Dr. Charles E. Bunnell, not Dr. William R. Wood. 1935, the year that the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines was renamed the University of Alaska. 33 years ago, when enrollment had reached 116 students instead of today's nearly 2,000. But 116 students represented recovery from the disaster of depression, just as today's total enrollment represents recovery from last summer's disastrous flood. The year 1935, when the territorial legislature appropriated the then staggering sum of $35,000 for adding a second story to the gymnasium building, thus providing suitable housing for a new library. Today, your university is beginning construction of a five-story library to house 400,000 volumes. The parallels between the University of Alaska of 1935 and 1968 are significant because they suggest one problem that persists throughout a university's life, the problem of planning, funding, and constructing the buildings necessary to meet the needs of ever-increasing enrollment. We explain what is being done to solve this problem today on This Is Your University. In 1970, an estimated 3,180 students will seek a higher education on the University of Alaska's campus at College. To accommodate this number, planners are scheduling one of the largest and most inclusive series of construction projects in the university's history. The university's Office of Planning and Operations has set forth a capital improvements program projected at an approximate total cost of $55 million over the next 6 years. Charles Sargent, Executive Director of Planning, says the present program of construction will give us the core facility to become a true university in the broadest sense. Most spectacular of the new projects is the Library, Fine Arts, and Humanities Complex, a set of four buildings designed by the Anchorage architectural firm of Manley & Mayer. The appearance of the Arts Complex will be characterized by an upward sweep of three-story cantilevers, which brace impressive overhangs on each of the main buildings. The aggregate will be arranged in a rectangular fashion and interconnected by a glassed-in mall. The dominant structure of the group will be the library, which will then be the largest single building on the main campus. It will replace the present library in the Bunnell Building and contain as many as 400,000 volumes. Other features of the complex will be a 1,200-seat music hall, a 500-seat drama theater, a special instructional areas, classroom, and administrative offices. At present, 2.16 acres needed for the buildings are being cleared. Planning Director Sargent hopes construction will be underway by April 15th. Funds for the complex include $8.5 million from a bond issue approved by Alaskan voters in 1966 and nearly $2 million from various federal sources. Completion is set for the fall of 1970. To keep abreast of the burgeoning student population, the university plans to add 4 new dormitories. A 322-bed dormitory is being bid upon at present, with awarding of a contract expected within a month. Building will begin this summer, and 4 of 8 floors are to be open for occupancy in 1970. Another current project is construction of a 7-story Geophysical Institute building, with the first spadeful of dirt to be turned July 1st. Other projects now in the funding process include a student activity center, 2 buildings for the social sciences and mineral sciences, a museum, field house, and a dining hall as part of the new dormitory complex. 3 community college buildings will soon go up. A $500,000 structure will be built in Ketchikan on a 48-acre site donated by the Ketchikan Pulp Company. Designs are by Jennings Graham, and the apparent low bidder for construction is McGilvery Brothers of Ketchikan. The Juneau Douglas area will have a similar community college building planned by Lynn A. Forrest and Sons of Juneau. It will be located at Auk Bay, north of the capital city. A large project is planned for the Anchorage Community College, where enrollment now exceeds 2,000 evening students. A $4 million, 6-building complex is due for initial construction work early this summer. With these construction projects moving ahead, your university will keep pace with the academic and research demands now being placed upon it. Demands which have been felt and met every year since its designation as the University of Alaska in 1935. This is Your University as a weekly recorded program, produced by the University of Alaska Department of News Service and radio station KUACFM. It has been brought to you by the station as a public service. Your announcer has been Dave Giesen. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.
From the University of Alaska at College, this is Your University. On Friday, March 29th of this year, the 10th Annual Festival of Fine Arts, presented by the College of Arts and Letters of the University of Alaska, began. It will run until the 14th of April of this year. The Festival of Arts is our story today on This Is Your University, and our guest is Assistant Professor of Journalism, Professor Gene Donner, who is one of the co-chairmen of the festival for this year, the other co-chairman being Associate Professor of Music Jean-Paul Biot. Professor Donner, what can we look forward to in this year's festival?
Well, there's quite a bit. It's an expanded program, and expanded because it is the 10th annual festival, and we tried to make it as big as possible. We had originally planned for a 3-week festival, the first week being a film festival of international films, a Cannes award-winning prize, international films. The second week was a musical festival, and the third week was to have been the White Horse International Drama Competition. However, due to a number of reasons, mainly financial, we could not get as many participants in that drama competition, and so it had to be canceled. But the festival still has quite a number of things. The highlights, perhaps, of the festival will be the Lorindo Almeida, the famous Spanish guitarist and originator, perhaps for those who remember back then, of the Bossa Nova, and William Warfield, the famed baritone, bass baritone, will be singing the Passion of St. John, and together with the 100 voice chorus put together by Charles Davis, the University Community Chorus. We also have famed critic, poet, playwright Kenneth Rexroth coming from San Francisco for an evening of his reciting of his poetry, and just we've entitled it An Evening with Kenneth Rexroth. He'll be chatting about things literary. So it should be a pretty exciting program.
You mentioned the fact that the drama competition had to be canceled. Are there any hopes for a future reinstatement?
Well, we are hoping, when we have our critique of this year's program, which will be coming, of course, after, that we can begin immediately. We have our co-chairman already appointed for next year's festival, and we are going to strongly encourage that the greater participation by more people in the state. When we were in Juneau last June, we talked to this group that participated in the White Horse International Drama Competition. They were most eager to attend, and this is the reason why we had planned. But because of a number of things, perhaps the date itself, and perhaps because, as I mentioned earlier, financial reasons, they could not attend, although they were very sorry they could not. Now, we are going to try to encourage this, not only in drama competition, but in music, in letters, in all sorts of cultural areas. We're going to try to get a greater participation by the people in Juneau, Ketchikan, all the southeastern, obviously Anchorage, Sitka, Kodiak. The thing that we're going to try to make now will be to pull as many prominent Alaskan artists into the University of Alaska's annual Festival of Fine Arts.
Now, in listing some of the highlights of the festival, you mentioned several people who would be coming from outside of Alaska. What campus organizations will be performing?
Well, we've got a number of those. Jean-Paul Biot will be giving a piano recital on the 14th, which will be the finale of the festival, as I mentioned. We have the Greta Brown's University Madrigal Singers. We have our poets, flying poets, in a poetry evening. We have lectures provided for and exhibits by our Faculty of Arts.
How many different exhibits will there be?
Well, we have three exhibits scheduled. We have a photo exhibit arranged by Professor Jimmy Bedford. We have the art exhibit by the three faculty members of the art department. And then we have the museum exhibit by Director Lou Rolinsky.
It sounds as though the days from March 29 to April 14 of this year will be very busy ones at the University of Alaska as it participates in its 10th annual Festival of Fine Arts, another service to the state of Alaska by your university. This program is produced by the Office of University Relations with the cooperation of University Radio Station KUAC. Your announcer has been Charles Northrup. This is the University of Alaska Broadcasting Service.